All right, so I bet you're thinking about the Electoral College after, well, all the recent stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely been in the news.
Big time. So get this, we're going to go deep on a Supreme Court case. This one goes right at a big question. Can states actually make electors vote how they want?
Ooh, interesting.
Right. Like, can they force them? We're talking Schiaffalo v. Washington, a 2020 decision really shook things up.
Schiaffalo. Now, that case is fascinating because it gets right at the heart of how the Electoral College works. Like, how much power do those electors actually have?
It's a good point because they're the ones technically who pick the president, right? Their
Exactly.
vote is huge.
Yeah.
So what happens if an elector just goes rogue?
Well, that's exactly what happened in 2016. In Washington state, you had three electors. They were pledged to Hillary Clinton, right?
You won the state.
Won the popular vote there. But these electors, they decided, you know what? We're going to vote for Colin Powell instead.
No way.
They were trying to get other electors to do the same to block Trump from winning.
Wow, like a total power move. So those are what we call faithless electors, right?
Exactly, faithless electors. In this case, it's super rare. Before Schiaffalo, there were only 16 instances of faithless electors in all of U.S. history.
Really? That few?
It almost never happens, but Washington State, they weren't messing around. They fined those electors $1,000 each because they broke their pledge. And that's what started this whole legal fight.
I bet. So this case is a constitutional showdown, right?
Absolutely. It's like head to head. Does the Constitution give electors the freedom to decide on their own, or can states tell them how to vote?
Okay, break it down for me. What were the arguments, legally speaking, from the elector side?
Yeah.
Why did they think they could do this?
Okay, so their argument was all about Article 2 and the 12th Amendment, the parts of the Constitution that deal with picking the president. They said those parts show the framers wanted electors to make their own choices.
Makes sense.
Like the Constitution says vote, that means you have the freedom to choose, right?
Yeah, it does kind of seem like, hey, if I'm picked to be an elector, I should get to vote how I want, even if the state or the voters disagree.
Exactly. They also said states can't control electors because they're doing a federal job. They're picking the president, and that's a national thing. So they said the Supremacy Clause means states can't butt in.
Interesting strategy. So, how did Washington State fight back against that?
Well, they had a pretty strong defense. They said, hold on, states have been making electors pledge their votes since the 1800s. This isn't some brand new power grab.
Like, if it's been working this way for centuries, it must be okay, right?
Right. And then they said, about the word vote, meaning you're free to choose anything. Well, the Constitution doesn't specifically say states can't put limits on electors' votes.
Ah, the classic. If it doesn't say we can't, then we can.
You got it. And their last point was clever. They brought up an old Supreme Court case, McPherson v. Blacker, from way back in 1892. It was about how electors are chosen. Back then, the court said if you have the power to appoint someone, you also have the power to set conditions on that appointment.
So Washington State was saying, hey, we get to pick the electors, so we can also say, you're in, but here are the rules.
Exactly. And this is where it gets really interesting because now it goes to the Supreme Court for a decision.
All right, hit me with it. What happened? Electors win or state?
Here's the thing. You'd think in a case like this, it'd be a split decision, like 5-4, 6-3. Some justices go one way, some go the other. But no, the court ruled 9-0 unanimous in favor of Washington State.
Whoa, everyone agreed. That's rare, especially on something this big.
Totally. Shows how strongly they felt about states having the power here.
So, to really understand what this means, let's dig into why they decided this way. Like, what was the logic?
All right, so Justice Kagan, she wrote the main opinion. She said, just because the Constitution says electors and vote, it doesn't automatically mean they can choose anything they want. It's not that simple. The Constitution doesn't actually say anything about restricting electors, and she argued that silence means states' DO get to regulate it.
Wait, so because the Constitution doesn't say anything about limiting electors, that actually means states have more power.
Yep, that's a key part of it. Then she looked at history, saying electors have almost always voted along party lines. She even brought up some old state laws, like one from Georgia in 1789, showing states have been calling the shots with electors for a long, long time.
So it's like they're saying, don't just take our word for it, look how it's always been done.
Exactly. And lastly, she talked about the potential for chaos. She said if electors could just ignore the voters, it'd be total pandemonium. People wouldn't trust elections anymore.
Yeah, I could see how that would worry the court, especially these days when everyone's talking about election integrity.
Absolutely. But get this. The decision was unanimous. But Justice Thomas, he had his own thoughts too. He agreed with the outcome, but for different reasons.
Oh, interesting. Why did he agree but think about it differently?
Well, Justice Thomas, he's a textualist. That means he sticks really closely to what the Constitution actually says. He based his reasoning on the 10th Amendment.
Ah, the one about states keeping the powers that the Constitution doesn't give to the feds.
That's the one. He basically said if the Constitution doesn't specifically forbid something, states get to decide. And since it doesn't say anything about elector discretion, he said states have that power.
So two different roads, same destination. It's amazing how the justices can all agree on the answer but get there in totally different ways.
It really shows you how complex this stuff is.
It does.
And the impact of this case is huge. It changes how we think about elections. We should really dive into those effects.
Absolutely. Let's get into it. What does this decision actually mean for the future of, you know, how we pick presidents? Yeah. What changed? So the Supreme Court is saying, yeah, Washington State, you're good. States can tell electors how to vote. But what does that mean for us, like, for how we actually pick a president? What changes because of this?
Yeah, that's the big question. This isn't just about some fines in Washington. This case, it set a precedent for the whole country. And one thing it did was it made it crystal clear that states have the power over their electors.
So before this, like before Kieflo, was there any doubt that states could actually enforce those pledge laws? The ones that say, hey, electors, you got to vote this way.
Exactly. There were definitely questions about if those laws were even constitutional. But Kieflo settled that debate. The court basically said, states, you're in charge here. Electors, follow the rules.
And right now, like 32 states and D.C. have those pledge laws, right?
You're right. It's not just a small thing. It affects a huge chunk of the Electoral College.
It does.
And that brings us to another big thing. This case affects how people see the Electoral College. Like, do people think it's legit?
Okay, yeah, I'm curious about that. How does Kieflo play into this whole debate about whether the Electoral College even works anymore?
Well, think about one of the biggest complaints about the Electoral College. Electors could just flip the script, right? They could go against the popular vote. Kieflo basically makes that way less likely. By saying states can enforce those pledges, the court made it a lot harder for electors to go rogue and change the outcome of an election.
So, in a way, this case could actually make people more confident in the Electoral College because it makes the results more predictable.
That's the idea. And remember, this case comes right after the 2016 election. That election was crazy. Everyone was talking about the Electoral College, questioning if it was fair. So Kieflo, it kind of calmed things down a bit. Like, the court was saying, look, this one issue at least is settled. Now let's focus on the bigger problems.
Makes sense. You know, this is making me think about those other Supreme Court cases about voting rights. Shelby County, Rucho, those were big ones.
Oh, you're right. Those cases, they were about the Voting Rights Act and gerrymandering. They've changed how elections work in a big way. And Kieflo, it's all part of this trend. The court is trying to figure out who has more power, states or the federal government, especially when it comes to elections.
So Kieflo is like another piece of this big, complicated puzzle.
Exactly.
It helps us understand how the court thinks about these big questions about who gets to decide how we vote.
Exactly. But the thing is, not everyone's happy with the Kieflo decision. Some people have some real criticisms of it.
Okay, let's talk about that. What are the arguments against the ruling?
Well, some people say it goes against what the framers originally wanted for the Electoral College. They say the framers didn't want electors to just be robots. They wanted them to be smart people who could make their own judgments.
Right. Like they were supposed to be these wise folks who could step in and make sure we picked the right person for president, even if the voters got it wrong.
That's the idea. And some critics say by giving states all this control over electors, Kieflo turns them into puppets. The state legislature pulls the strings and the electors just dance. It takes away that whole thinking, deliberating part of the system.
Yeah, it's like the electors still technically get to vote, but it doesn't really matter because they have to do what the state tells them to do anyway.
That's the argument. And it brings up some serious questions about how fair the system is and how the Electoral College fits into a modern democracy.
So how do you square those criticisms with what the court decided? Is there a way to see both sides?
It's definitely tricky. To understand the court's view, I think it helps to remember the time when they wrote the Constitution. Back in the 1780s, people didn't really trust direct democracy. They were worried about giving regular people too much power. They didn't think the average person knew enough to choose the president.
Right. They were afraid of mob rule. They wanted something to protect against people making bad choices because they weren't informed.
Exactly. But then, as time went on, The idea that the people are the source of power, that's called popular sovereignty, that became more and more important in America. And that created some conflict with the original purpose of the Electoral College.
So this whole debate about Chiafalo is really about two different ideas of what democracy is, right?
You got it.
The framers' idea, where people have a limited role, and then the modern idea, where the popular vote is king.
Exactly. And maybe the court's decision doesn't make everyone happy, especially those who want a more thoughtful electoral college. But it does line up with this modern idea that the people should decide.
So they're basically saying, look, it's the 21st century. The people's vote should be the deciding factor, and we're not going to let a few electors mess that up.
Exactly. And that leads to the most important question. What does all this mean for the average person?
Right. Why should someone who's not a lawyer or a judge care about this case?
Good question. Well, first off, Chiafalo shows how much power states have in picking the president. And as we've seen, elections have consequences. Whoever's president, their decisions affect all of us.
Totally. The president's policies, they affect everything.
Mm-hmm.
Healthcare, education, the environment, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
So we got to understand how those elections work and who has the power to change things.
You're right. And Chiafalo is a reminder. The Electoral College, with all its weirdness, is still how we do things. You might love it, you might hate it, but it picks the most powerful person in the world.
So we got to get how this system works, especially with this new decision.
Exactly. And going into 2024 and all the elections after that, we need to keep Chiafalo in mind. It could be the deciding factor if an election is close, especially if there is a lot of pressure on electors to switch sides.
It makes you wonder, what would the guys who wrote the Constitution think about all of this?
That's a great question. I think they'd be amazed by how much the country's changed and how much we argue about the Electoral College now. And that's what makes this whole conversation so interesting.
It really does. This case answers one specific legal question, but it opens up a bunch of new questions about the future of democracy in America. That's something for all of us to think about. So we've been talking all about Chiafalo v. Washington, and man, it really feels like this case was a game changer for how we think about the Electoral College.
Yeah, no doubt. It cleared up the legal stuff, but it also, like, kicked off even more debate about how much power states have in picking the president and what that means for democracy in America.
Big questions. So as we wrap up our deep dive, what's the main takeaway? Like, what's the so what for our listeners?
The big takeaway is Chiafalo basically confirms that states have a ton of power when it comes to presidential elections. They can make their electors vote for whoever won the state's popular vote, and that's backed up by the Supreme Court.
So even if someone doesn't like that system,
mm-hmm.
legally, it's pretty clear states have the authority.
That's right. And this isn't just some legal theory, you know. It has real-world effects, especially in those nail-biter elections where a few states could decide the whole thing.
Yeah, I see how this case matters even more if there's pressure on electors to switch sides when it's a really close race.
Absolutely. Chiafalo makes it way harder for electors to just go rogue because now they could get in legal trouble. It basically makes the popular vote within a state matter even more, and that's a pretty big change.
It's like the court put up some guardrails to prevent the whole election from going haywire, which a lot of people were worried about after 2016.
Yeah, good point.
It might not be a perfect system, but at least Chiafalo makes the rules clear, right?
I think that's a good way to look at it. It makes things more predictable, you know? And that can be a good thing in a system that's often so complicated.
Right. But it also makes you think, doesn't it? Like, if states have this much power over electors, does that mean they have too much influence on picking the president? What does that do to the whole balance of power between states and the federal government?
That is the question, isn't it? Chiafalo might settle the legal stuff, but it starts this whole other debate about what role states should have in national politics. And that's a debate we need to have, especially with another election coming up.
So what's the big thing you want our listeners to walk away thinking about?
Well, the fight over faithless electors, that might be over. But the argument about the Electoral College and whether it works for our democracy, that's definitely not over. Chiafalo forces us to ask, how much power should states have in choosing the president? Is this system really representing what people want? Those are questions every single one of us needs to think about when we vote.
That's a powerful thought. Chiafalo v. Washington might be about electors, but it's really about the foundation of our democracy, you know?
It is.
And where the power lies. It reminds us that this isn't just legal mumbo jumbo. It affects our lives, our future.
I agree completely. It makes us really think about how our democracy works and how we want it to work going forward.
Well said. And on that note, I think we've come to the end of our deep dive today. It's been a fascinating journey into the legal maze and all the big implications of Chiafalo v. Washington. Thanks for joining us, everyone.